When it came to the block parties and the hip hop, once I saw them grabbing mice and getting busy, I risked my livelihood, getting kicked out of the house and everything just to be a part.
You're on point five.
All the time, Tip.
You're on point five.
All the time, Tip.
You're on point five.
All the time, Tip.
But then grab the microphone.
How'd you like it?
Now here's a funky introduction of how nice I am. Tell your mother, tell your father, send a telegram. I'm like an energizer because you see I last long. My crew is never ever whack.
Welcome back to the Face to Foot Style podcast with Popo and the Schmo. This is Popo.
And this is the Schmo.
And we are and we are back to blow your minds with our wealth of MMA knowledge or the lack thereof. And so here we go. Like, sorry, apologies go to everybody who actually looks forward to hearing us every week. We were gone for a week. It wasn't planned. We just had a lot of technical difficulties and scheduling problems that just all popped up last minute. So apologies for missing an episode. But you know what? If there was a week to be missed, that was it. Because not much happened in the world of mixed martial arts as far as events to be covered and things like that. I mean, you know, we had a lot of rumors that were floating around, but pretty much all the news items that we're going to go over today are just confirmations of the rumors that they were last week. So really, I mean, that was a good week to miss, because basically there's no real news, just a bunch of rumors, and no real events to recap, except for Frank Mir versus, of course, Mark Hunt. We're going to recap that briefly, I mean, because we're sure that you've heard a dozen recaps talking about the same controversies and everything, but we're still going to touch on that for a brief moment and go into the major news items. But first, we're going to go back to a segment that's only been brought up twice, I believe, in this podcast, and I'm going to add to it a little bit. We're going back to Popo's predictions, and for those who have been listening for a while, you may remember I called it at the beginning of the year, where I said I predict for 2016 Conor McGregor is going to have back-to-back losses this year. Now, when I made that initial prediction, I was predicting Conor was going to fight RDA, lose, and then he would have to go back to his division and fight and defend his title against Frankie Edgar and lose there. But I didn't back down when the opponents changed up, as some of you remember. When RDA was replaced by Nate Diaz last minute, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to back out of it. I still think Nate Diaz has got this. I think he's going to hand him his first loss. And so, bouncing off of that, here we are. Conor is not going to defend his title for some weirdo reason. Some of that only happens in Conor land, because that's basically all that this is. I mean, this is... ridiculous, but you know what? All reasoning besides, the point is it's happening. He's now rematching Nate Diaz, not even at 155 pounds, the weight class that they should both be fighting in right now. They're going back to 170 because Conor gets what he wants, even following a loss, and he's going to fight Nate Diaz again. So it's like, look, this isn't even a stretch like it was the first time. Before, I was like, look, I'm sticking to my guns. Nate Diaz is my dude. I think the more I think about it, the more I break it down, the more confident I was that Nate was actually going to be Conor. It panned out to be correct. Look, it's all of those same reasons that I stuck to before, except now Nate's got the advantage of a full training camp. I mean, that's Nate. We saw what happened when Nate shows up, you know, after chilling on a boat. Popping shots at tequila and all that, still shows up and wrecks Conor. And I mean, look, on top of the fact that this isn't a weight class that neither of them are good or are supposed to be their best at, on top of the fact that Nate Diaz is going to have a full training camp, on top of all of that, we're just going to get this repeat where, look, do I think that Conor has a chance to win? Of course he does. Like, Conor is a good fighter. And not only that, but he's a very smart fighter. I think you're not going to see a repeat of the first fight, but I still don't think that Conor on his best day can beat Nate Diaz on his best day. And we've already seen what happens when Conor on his best day fights Nate Diaz on his worst day. So there's nothing, to me, the result's going to be the same. I mean, I think it goes a little bit longer this time. Nate Diaz still wins by finish in my prediction. But the point is, Popo's predictions is sticking with this update of back-to-back losses for Connor. Now, I'm going to add on to this. I'm going to say Connor's going to get three losses in a row. Only because at this point, if he loses to Nate Diaz for a second time, he has no business being at 170. He has no business being at lightweight. He just lost to a lightweight number five ranked contender twice in a row, but both times at 170. He has nothing to go off of there. The only place that he will have value, the only weight class he will have value after that, is at 145. He has to go back and defend his title at that point. That's the only thing he's going to have going for him at that point. So he's going to have to face Frankie Edgar, in my opinion. And Frankie will absolutely beat Connor. And that's just Popo's predictions. That's not hate on Connor or nothing. I just honestly think that Frankie Edgar, as much as Nate Diaz has a chance of beating Connor, I think Frankie Edgar is like the perfect archetype. If you were going to construct a fighter specifically to beat Conor McGregor, I think it would be Frankie Edgar. So, three back-to-back losses for Conor McGregor in 2016 in Pobo's predictions. But I have also one that I'm going to add on to that. Now, this is a long-running prediction, and it's one that we're going to have to dig this episode up and replay it when it happens, because I'm telling you, it's going to happen. With all of this talk about Conor seeking a belt at two different weight classes, which, you know, that's an awesome thing. You know, not only two guys have done that in the UFC so far. And I don't think that it was out of his grasp. I think Conor being distracted by trying to take fights at 170, etc., not even focusing on fighting champions and contenders, he's not going to achieve that goal for a long time. So, however, I am going to say right now that Frankie Edgar will actually hold belts in three different weight classes before Conor McGregor ever holds belts in two. And I'm just saying that because, I mean, look, Frankie Edgar, he's already been the lightweight champion. I mean, that belt that Conor's chasing right now, was chasing a few months ago, Frankie can honestly say, I've been there and done that. He's fought the bigger guys before. He's been the champion over the bigger guys. Now he's in the weight class where he's probably like best suited. He still only cuts like 10 pounds at most when he goes into his fights, and he's at the top of the heat. And he's been on fire for his last five fights in a row. I think Frankie Edgar gets the featherweight title, and then it's not a stretch to say, hey, I want to go down to bantamweight, because you saw when he fought Uriah Faber. Dude, their sizes were not that far off. In fact, Uriah looked like the bigger guy. Frankie has said this year about at least a year ago, where he's like, look, I want to be the first three title holder in the UFC, and he absolutely could do it. So that's just my Popo's predictions. It's going to be a long time before we can pull this up or before it blows up in my face. We'll see, but you can guarantee that when it's wrong, we're going to pull it up. So that's the segment for today. Popo's prediction.
We're better than you, and we know it.
Exactly.
We're better than you, and we know it.
That's right. That's right.
And that's how it's going to go, folks. You heard it from the horse's mouth or whatever that saying is. Popo
from the Popo's
is
mouth.
Predicting. Predicting it once again. I mean, well, so far you haven't been wrong. So we'll have to keep that going and bring it up when it's relevant. Now, I believe that it's going to be the same thing. I actually do. Connor's got the momentum, but if Nate Diaz puts him down a second time, and I don't even know. I shouldn't even say if, but, you know, anything can happen. But I really feel like Nate Diaz is going to bring it home again. And what does that do? That puts back-to-back losses on Conor McGregor. His marketability is still going to be high because he can promote a fight. I mean, Chael Sonnen was able to do it. Conor McGregor will definitely be able to stay in the conversation for high-profile fights. So he'll go back and try to unify the belts because Frankie, of course, is fighting Jose for an interim belt at featherweight. And so, you know, the title unification bout's still going to go down. And, yeah, I don't know. I think Frankie's a nightmare for Conor McGregor. As long as Frankie's chin holds up, as it always has, because for sure he's going to take some shots. I don't think it's going to be a matter of if. I mean, Conor's definitely going to catch him. But it's a matter of when Frankie's able to put the hurt on him and take him to the ground. We want to jump into a quick recap of Frank Mir versus Mark Hunt. This did happen a long time ago in terms of an episode we did miss last week's episode, and so we're going to be backpedaling a little bit. Popo wanted to bring up real quick a few of the top fights that he noticed when he watched the card. So go ahead, Popo, take it away.
Yeah, you know, and this is just a quick recap of the main card. I don't have anything extensive on this because, you know, it's been 2 weeks almost since we had this card. So, you know, just to touch on it really quick, I mean, Beck Rawlings went in and fought Hom. That was a fun fight, very busy fight, went back and forth. The story of each round was basically Hom, like, showed up with the speed and the combos, and but Beck Rawlings, like, would always come back with the hard, strong punches every time that she landed, and she did land. It's not like those were few and far between, but, you know, like, when she landed, you just saw it just rock Hom. Like, she was definitely the smaller girl in that fight, and she, she definitely felt those blows. I mean, I could be mistaken, but I think she actually is used to fighting at a flyweight. So normally she's fighting smaller girls. So, I mean, Beck Rawlings, not flyweight. I think atom weight. Excuse me. But the point is like, that was basically the story of each round. Now, in round number two, Beck Rawlings took Hom's back, and Hom was nearly submitted by Beck with a triangle in round three. So at the end of the fight, you know, I saw it the same as the judges did for Beck Rawlings, just because she had two moments where it seemed like she was closer to finishing the fight than Hom was. I mean, but, you know, there's definitely a valiant effort by Hom. Thought it was kind of weird that Kenny Florian or John Anik said at the end that they think the judges got it wrong. Which, you know, if you see it differently, sure. I mean, it's not like it was cut and dry. It was definitely a close fight, but I don't think it was stretched that Beck Rawlings won just because she was in her home crowd. I think she definitely pulled out that win legitimately, but that's just my opinion. Skipping ahead, we had unfortunately we had Tahuna versus Bosse. Now Joe and I, Shmo and I, we're very partial to Polynesian fighters. We always try to, you know, rep for the Polys, man. But, you know, unfortunately, Tahuna is, you know, I really think he's just at the point where he's seen his best days. It was heartbreaking last year to see him get dominated by Nate Marquardt. And this was even more of a devastating loss. He got, I think just as both of these guys got a feel for each other, that he looked like they were both starting to loosen up, Bosse just cracks Tahuna with a short right to the jaw and drops the Kiwi. I mean, it was really sad to see. And, you know, I mean, I don't like to be the guy who says, oh man, this guy needs to retire, that guy needs to retire, because it's subjective for every person, and nobody knows better than the fighter themselves. And we've seen guys go through bad streaks and come back before, but in the case of Tahuna, it's like, look, I really don't want to see this guy get hurt no more. He's had a great career. He's got nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, man, I wish that he could have gone a little bit further, but, you know, that's the game. This is a hard game. So I actually hope that he, you know, obviously he's going to reassess where he's at right now. And if he walks away from the fight game, you know what? He's got a wealth of knowledge to impart to upcoming fighters, that he could be a trainer, all this other stuff. I mean, he gave a valiant run, and he has nothing to be ashamed of. And I think it, you know, just, you know, call it good while you still got all your faculties together. So, I mean, that's just my opinion. Shmoa, what do you think as far as Tahuna goes?
Yeah, Tahuna needs to, I don't know, man. Like I said, I'll leave that up to the, like you were saying, the fighter. They know better about what they should do. I don't like seeing him get beat, but it is interesting because he was all reinvigorated and ready for this fight because he had already contemplated retiring and just, you know, leaving the fight game altogether and before he took this fight because, you know, he wasn't handling the loss as well. So he was reinvigorated. He went back to his roots for his fighting, training, and all this stuff, and he was ready to go, and then boom. I don't know. I don't know if he should... I don't think he should call it quits quite yet, but it would be interesting to see him try to explore a different weight class. I don't know if he could cut down to... what's it called?
To welterweight?
He's fighting at light heavyweight.
I thought he was fighting at middleweight.
Is he? Didn't he fight Shogun, though? He fought Shogun at 205.
Yeah, so, but I think he's cut down to middleweight since. Yeah, I'm pretty sure when he fought Marquardt, he was at middleweight, because that was Marquardt's return to middleweight after going on a stint at welterweight.
Well, now I have no idea, because Boss fights at 205. He's a light heavyweight. So maybe he went back up.
I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe Tahuna went back up. I just really think that he's given a... I think he's seen his best days, and I just don't want to see the guy hurt no more.
I'd like to see him jump down again in weight class. If he was... I'm pretty sure this last fight was at light heavyweight with Steve Boss. If that's not the case, then forgive me, but I'd like to see him try again at middleweight and take on another, you know, maybe... up-and-coming contender and see if he can handle it. I just want to see him try to go out on a win, at least give it another shot.
I'd like to see him do that, but I think it might be the wrong call dropping down in another weight class. I mean, because if the head trauma was bad before, it's going to be worse when he's even more dehydrated. I mean, I think he's in really good shape when he shows up. I would hate to think that he's even more dehydrated to cut down even more. I think that's going to do even more damage and wear and tear on his body at this point. So I don't know if I exactly agree with that, but that's just me. It's like, I don't know.
Just you.
Yeah, that's just me. I mean, I don't know him. Like, he probably could. I mean, but I think that's past him. So... But we'll see. I mean, and you know what? Like I said, Joe and I are always repping for the Pauly, so any fight that he says that he's going to do, we're going to be watching, like, for sure. So, moving on, though. So, did you have any more you wanted to add on that subject, bro?
Nope.
All right. So, we're going to jump right into one of the more controversial fights of the evening. Hector Lombard has his return after his suspension due to PEDs. And he fights Neil Magny, who I believe now is, what, 7 of 8? No, 10 of 11, I believe. I think his only loss in the longest time has been to Damian Maia. And I think, yeah, I believe he's 10 of 11 right now as far as records are concerned. And so that was a crazy fight full of controversy. Joe, did you want to give your recap of this to... get us started on this, or like, let us know what your thoughts were of the first round.
It was interesting because, I mean, it always depends on who's the ref and, you know, the night and everything, but I really thought that Magny was going to, I thought that they were going to stop the fight because at the first round.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are talking about, I feel like the fight should have been stopped at least in the second round when Magny was just unloading on him and Lombard had nothing for him, whether it was fatigue or the fact that he was really, really hurt. Either way, they had no business continuing the fight. But again, I want to go back to the first round because a lot of people are pretty upset and making a big deal out of how poorly the fight was reffed because it should have been stopped in the second. I make the argument... It is very close to being stopped in the first round. I mean, they were doing okay. They were getting loose. They were getting ready. And Lombard just, like, explodes on Magny, gets him rocked. I mean, just rocked. And he's down. He takes a bunch of uncontested punches. The best he can do is hold his hand up. And he wasn't moving his head. He was just putting his hand up, and punches were flying right through his arm. You know, some were hitting his arm, and some rest were hitting his head. I mean... A lot of refs on a lot of different nights have stopped fights for less. And you know, Magny was pretty much down for the count most of that round. But obviously, I am very happy they didn't stop it, because clearly Magny was at least got his wits about him, because by the end of the round he started to bring it back. He finally shook it off. Lombard slowed down just enough to give him his space, and Magny was able to open up a little bit just to show, hey, at least this shouldn't be a 10-8 round. But yeah, that's all I wanted to say about that. As far as that goes, geez, Magny put on a show, and it was amazing. I mean, against a grinder, a guy who puts on a lot of pressure sometimes, Lombard is very difficult when he clinches you and pushes you around against the fence. It's not usually his style, because he likes to stand and bang, but he can definitely do it. And Magny was fighting so well in the clinch. He wasn't too worried about, you know, Lombard pushing on him. He was, geez, man, I don't know what to say, but Magny's impressed me, because I was a little bit hesitant to say, ah, this guy's... Because at first, when he was, right before he fought Maya, I was like, yeah, man, he's a tough young kid, he's coming up. And I thought he was going to be this amazing dude, and then I saw him lose, and I was like, oh, crap, I don't know, man. It seems like we found the chink in his armor, but he's gone on since a 3-fight win streak against some pretty tough dudes, and Hector Lombard and Kelvin Gastelum. That was a close fight, by the way, but, you know, I think Magny is definitely a man to be feared now at 170, because he just put the hurt on a guy that a lot of people were scared of, I think.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, I mean, that's why we both picked him the week before the fight. I said, look, Magny is that new up-and-comer. He's that new guy that's here to dominate. And it's not, when I say new, he's obviously not new, because, like I said, he's 10 of 11 right now. But it's like he hasn't flinched with the higher caliber fighters, with an exception of Damian Maya. Hector Lombard, it's like, I don't believe he was a top fiver in this one. He's definitely dropped in rankings for inactivity, and I think as partially as a punishment for popping for PEDs. But let's not remember, let's not forget that Hector Lombard was a top five fighter before he was out. So, I mean, Magny took it to him, and he looked impressive. But it was kind of controversial, I thought, that they didn't score the first round, a 10-8 round, because I think that's as close as you can get to a 10-8 round without actually, I don't know. I mean, because just for the fact that he was almost out, and that was the majority of the round, but I don't know. I mean, people score it both ways, but I thought that was definitely a 10-8 round. But none of the judges saw it that way, and that seems to be some of the outcry for what happened in Australia, is the fact that not a single one of those judges scored it for 10-8. I forget who it was, one of the, you know, the brass at UFC, he said he's actually planning a meeting with all of the referees and the judges that were involved. And he's asking them all directly, why didn't you score any 10-8s in this fight? Now, when I say any 10-8s, it's because the second round came out and it was a banger too. Like Joe was saying, like, Magny comes out, he finds his distance, he's picking him apart. You know, Hector still landed, like, some pretty hard blows. Don't get it wrong. It's not like it was completely one-sided up until Magny got his back, got on top of him, and landed. I swear it had to be, I haven't looked at the official stats yet for this round. I don't know if Schmo has, but he landed at almost 100 unanswered punches from his back. And it's like, look, they probably weren't the hardest punches in the world, but, you know, it's kind of been the rule set. If you are not defending yourself, you are out of the fight. And you have this ref, like, 2 feet away looking right at him. Hector is doing nothing to advance his position or to even stop the punches. Nothing. Every punch is getting through. Every one of them is smashing him in the face. And I think the most he manages is to give a thumbs up. It's like, look, a thumbs up is not defending yourself. So that was ridiculous. And it's like, you know what? That round could have been scored a 10-8. Not a single judge gave it that. So it was bizarre, and so we of course know that they go back to their corners, they come out the next round. Hector Lombard's completely spent, Gas like completely has nothing, and Magny just basically took his time, took him apart, slapped on a triangle from the top, from the mount, and wasn't trying to choke him out, but he was just holding him there to land punches, and you know, fortunately the ref finally stops the freaking fight. Look, and the bummer thing about this is that in Australia they've been very critical, because MMA can only be, like, MMA fights can only be held within certain states in Australia, and part of it is because of the criticism that some people think it's too brutal, and they've come out with news articles and reports in their media talking about how disgusting this is. Well, this is one of those fights that unfortunately is going to be an example that their media is going to use, because like, this is a guy, these guys were completely destroying each other, and like Joe was saying, like, we could have seen a stop in the fight at two different points where we didn't. So I don't know, crazy fight. I'm glad Magny won, but I mean, it was a close fight, and if they had stopped that in the first round, I wouldn't have argued with it either. Shmo, anything else you wanted to say on that fight?
No, man, it was a crazy fight, though. It was friggin' awesome.
Cool. So, skipping right down to the main event, Mark Hunt versus Frank Mir. Man, this was pretty much how we broke it down the week before the fight, or the week of the fight. It's like, look, I love Frank Mir, and I think his current run is actually better than what you're going to see on paper. I think he beat Arlovsky. He was actually on a 3-fight win streak when he went in there, but it's like, even giving him that, and granted, his striking's gotten better. He's gotten 2 knockouts in a row in the last year, but it's like, look, you're not knocking out Mark Hunt. You got to be a striker at the caliber of Junior Dos Santos, or even like a all-around, a well-rounded fighter like a Fabricio Werdum, if you're going to do that. And I just didn't see Frank as that. It's like, he's a good striker, but he's not the best. And he's, and Frank Mir is probably the most well-rounded guy in the heavyweight division, but because he never had a strong wrestling style, I just didn't see his grappling being enough to take Mark Hunt down. Mark Hunt's takedown defense has been too good, and that's pretty much what the story of the fight was. I don't think Frank even attempted to take him down at any point. And I'm like, look, if you're going to stand...
He did.
Oh, he did? He did attempt? Okay, I couldn't remember that.
Several times, yeah.
Yeah.
He just was never finding the right level. He never caught him. He was trying to... You could tell he was trying to set up a lot of his takedowns really intelligently, just like, you know, a smart MMA fighter would do. But he wasn't able to find the opportunity quite yet, and unfortunately he got cracked before he could really find that opening.
Yeah.
Well,
and that there's a certain,
I mean, that's really how it went.
And there's a certain, there's a degree that has to be said or ascribed to Mark Hunt's stature, because not only are you trying to take this dude down, and not only does Mark Hunt have good takedown defense skill wise, but you're taking down one of the shorter guys in the heavyweight division, but one of the shorter guys who is close to the maximum size cap, you know, at this weight class. So he's a very short, stocky dude. Like, the level change that you have to do to, like, even try to go for a single leg or a double leg that's a big drop, you know, compared to some of the other taller, lankier heavyweights, like, let's say, against a Brent Rothwell or a Fabricio Werdum. Like, your level change is that much lower when you're going to try to shoot for a takedown on Mark Hunt. There's definitely something to be said about that.
Yeah. You know, and here, just to throw this at you, on Fight Metrics, for the total 3-minute fight that it lasted, Frank Mir essentially tried a takedown a minute. So he had 3 takedown attempts, all stuffed, just
thank you. Thanks for dropping that back on me. Obviously, I didn't pay too much attention to that. I was just looking for the knockout, man. I mean, because look, I knew that he was going to be able to take him down, and when you're forced to stand up and strike with somebody, if that somebody is a former K-1 Grand Prix champ, you know, good luck. I'm sorry. Like, you know, I don't care how good your striking's gotten recently, you're not catching up to that guy. and that's pretty much how it panned out. Now, initially, after the knockout happened, you know, Mark Hunt found his found the ear of Frank Mir, dropped him. Frank Mir immediately dropped to the guard, and it looks like he was ready to continue fighting, but the ref stopped it as Mark Hunt was walking away. And it initially kind of looked like it might have been an early stoppage to some people, but Mark Hunt said, look, I looked into his eyes and he just wasn't there. Mark Goddard, I believe that was the referee. Mark Goddard.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think he's one of the better refs out there. You know, he'll be mentioned with Big John and Herb Dean. But Mark Goddard said the same thing. I looked at his eyes. He says he had his right eye was looking one direction. His left eye was looking another direction. This wasn't there. But the biggest evidence for the fact that this was not a premature stoppage is that Frank Mir and his corner have all made statements saying, no, it was not an early stoppage. In fact, his corner thanked the ref for stopping it when he did, so he didn't have to get more damage because that was a legitimate knockout. Frank was out of that fight. So,
yeah, I was about to say that. That's how that was legit how they came out and said that. And I'm glad they did because, you know, people like to circulate a lot of controversy around stupid things. And I hate that word, too, sometimes. It's just controversy. Ah. It's just like, okay, come on, let's calm it down. And I'm glad they stepped up and were like, no. Right? Let's not try to make this more than it is. That was a good stoppage. Plain and simple. Thank you, Mark, for not following up with more punches. Thank you, Mark, for Mark Goddard, for stopping the fight. So, you know, it was good, and I'm glad that they were able to do that.
And let's keep in mind, these are guys that are just being completely honest, because Frank Mir, if he thinks that the fight stopped too soon, he'll voice it. Like the Josh Barnett fight, he's still upset that it got stopped when it did. He's like, look, Josh Barnett landed a good knee to the face, but I wasn't collapsing from being knocked out. I was going for a takedown, and you can see it in the footage. Frank Mir was going for a takedown. He was going for a single leg when he got cracked by Josh Barnett. So look, if Frank Mir thinks that he's still in the fight, he will voice that. He did not voice that here. It was a legitimate stoppage. So now, on the subject of Mark Hunt, we have seen him basically like take on almost everybody in the top 10 in the rankings, as far as the heavyweight rankings go. So what do you want to see next, Joe? Because basically, like, if he's going to advance, he needs higher ranked opponents, obviously, and it seems like everybody ranked above him is someone he's already fought, you know, with the exception of Cain Velasquez. So I'm going to call this the Mark Hunt Revenge Tour. Now, who do you want to see him fight next? First victim on his revenge tour.
Well, okay, so first off, if the result of Ben Rothwell versus Junior Dos Santos is that Rothwell ends up pulling off the victory and Junior gets put down a little bit, which would be appropriate because, you know, Junior's just lost to Overeem, and if he loses to Ben, all right, let's push him down. He's been at the top for so long, but he's clearly, you know, needing to make a statement that, hey, I still belong in the top. That fight with Mark Hunt would be a big draw, and it'd be perfect for Mark Hunt to try to get his revenge, because he wasn't doing horrible in that fight. He was actually pretty decent until he got caught, you know, with that big kick Dos Santos' shin to his top of Mark's head. I mean, it just totally knocked him off balance, and that ended the fight. So I'm sure Junior Dos Santos versus Mark Hunt would be a fun, exciting fight, stand-up battle. And personally, I'd like that loss to be avenged first. and rankings-wise, it actually make kind of a lot of sense because, you know, Mark lost two in a row to current heavyweight champion Fabricio Werdum and current number one contender Stipe Miocic. Okay, those were back-to-back losses. all right, let's, you know, it made sense. All right, let's make him fight Antonio Silva because Silva looks like he's on his way out. All right, Mark knocks him out. Sweet. All right, so give him somebody a little who's also been clambering back to the top, Frank Mir. All right, fine. Let's make that happen. Now he's knocked both of those dudes out, both in the first round and both within the first 3 minutes of the fight.
Right,
so,
yeah.
You know, it's like, all right, Mark is definitely still on his game. He can still knock people out. He's looking healthier. Let's give him somebody else who could still give him, who could keep him in the top rankings. And, you know, for Junior, it's not a loss either, because Junior, if Junior comes in and knocks out Hunt, I mean, that's going to look amazing, because Hunt's looked great in his last two fights. So, you know, I don't know. So I think that's the first one I want to see.
So you're saying Junior, whether Junior wins or loses, should get the rematch?
No. Actually, that win might make lose. Sense. Win or lose. But, yeah, I mean, if he loses, it would make a lot of sense. If he wins, yeah, I still see at least one more fight for Junior. And I don't think it's far off to say that, you know, if Junior wins and beats Rothwell, who's been on an absolute tear in the heavyweight division, then why not give him Mark Hunt and, you know, determine the next contender? Because really, I don't see a whole lot of people up at the top that could go for a title shot. I mean, other than Overeem. So if Overeem pulls off the win against Arlovsky, which I think he will, but we'll talk about that more later.
Well, and that's actually my pick for the fight, is I want to see the rematch with Overeem. He fought Overeem back in 2008, was submitted, and, I mean, that was a, kind of a dark time in his career. That was in the middle of his six losses in a row, and all six of those losses were by submission, like with an exception of Manhoff, who knocked him out amazingly, but the thing is like, I, you know, his submission defense game has you know, advanced so much since then. I would like to see him rematch Alistair Overeem. I don't think Overeem will. I don't think he's rounded out that much to be able to have the grappling edge over Mark Hunt again. And so it's going to come back to just a stand-up matchup, and I think Mark Hunt's chin has been proven, whereas Overeem's chin has failed him more than a few times, even recently. So I want to see the Overeem rematch, personally. Now, I'd probably only say that if he loses, because obviously Overeem is definitely doing good for himself. He just had a win over JDS, the former champion. He had a win over... and if he has a win over Arlovsky, who is like the former number one contender and former champion, I mean, that does kind of put him in line for the next title shot. But at the same time, I don't really see that putting him over Ben Rothwell if Ben Rothwell wins against JDS. I mean, because Rothwell has already knocked him out. So I think win or lose, Overeem should be the next one. And if not, Arlovsky's a good fight for Mark Hunt. So, all right. So moving on from that, we've got some good, some big news that dropped on us. We've got some big topics. Let's start with Johnny Jailbird Jones, the terror behind the wheel. John Jones turned himself in earlier this week after being pulled over, violating his probation. However, we don't know exactly if he's guilty of what he's been accused of, but he was mouthing off to a police officer. If you haven't seen the video, basically this cop pulled over John Jones, claiming that he was drag racing. Well, he claimed he were drag racing a Cadillac. The Cadillac obviously wasn't pulled over. John Jones says, "No, I wasn't. I just revved my engine. I took off at a high speed," but he asserts, "I never broke the speed limit." The cop comes back and says, "Well, I never said you broke the speed limit. I said you were drag racing." So this is kind of an interesting case, because we don't know exactly if he's going to be, if he's exactly guilty of what this cop is accusing him of. However, just for the fact that he got pulled over while he's on probation. That's what's got him some hot water. Shmo, what is your take on this? What was your first reaction when you heard this news?
I was just, well, I mean, let's just get to it. I mean, I was freaking like, are you kidding me? Are we going to miss out on another title shot where with DC? Like, I don't know. I was just like, man, I'm sick of him being gone out of competition because of stupid things like this. And I'm like, you know, at some point, somebody's got to say, you know, I don't know. And I haven't actually read the UFC's code of conduct, but they really need to put their foot down. And they did. And hats off to him for stripping him of the title and, you know, making him sort all that stuff out with his legal team. And, you know, after everything played out, I'm, you know, glad they stepped in and did that to him. But, man, again, like, I don't know. Again, it's just like you'd like to see some more clear ruling on this because it's like you're tugging at my heartstrings, John. Like, I'm not a huge John Jones fan. Like, obviously, I was like his character. But man, I'd love to watch him fight, and I'm just, it would be a shame to not be able to see him fight again. So as soon as I heard that, I was like, gosh dang it. Like, I mean, the only thing I want to see in this world is for Anthony Rumble Johnson to knock out John Jones. But I won't get to see that if he keeps doing stupid stuff like this and gets kicked out of UFC forever. So
right. Well,
that's where my mind trickled to.
Well, my first reaction was actually, dude, hire a freaking driver. Because I know this has been said. I mean, he was even asked this at the freaking conference that they had during the weekend of Conor versus Diaz 1. But it's not. It's like, look, that's half a joke and half serious. Honestly, you are protecting an investment, John Jones, when you hire a driver. When you pull out that cell phone and pull up the Uber app, you're protecting your investment. Your investment is your ability to make money, man. Like, it's not worth the risk. I mean, look, how many times are you going to get off scot-free for this? I mean, he's had so many slap-on-the-wrist punishments and just slap-on-the-wrist warnings. Dude, he was doing 70 in a 35-mile-an-hour zone, like, just a month or two ago. And all he got was a warning, man. I mean, if the cop wanted to do anything over that. Oh, and on top of that, he didn't have his driver's license or his registration. And he still just got a warning. Dude, you are being treated like gold, and you are still doing stupid stuff. Now, granted, maybe John wasn't doing stupid stuff. But the point is, why take the risk? You're in training camp. Let somebody else drive you. You have the money to do that, and it will probably save you more money in court fees, lawyer fees, etc. Or, you know, slash fines that you get for screwing up your contract. I, man, look, hire a freaking full-time driver. Or just take a taxi. Or just, dude, I'm sure there are people at Jackson Wink that will be willing to carpool with you, man. It's not worth it.
Seriously. Like,
my gosh. I mean, that's just saying, like, as far as getting him to the fights, but what's to be said of the danger he poses to himself and to others? I mean, we've already seen him crash into a pregnant lady that thankfully didn't have a miscarriage, just got a broken arm. I mean, no big deal there, I guess. And all he got was community service. Look, I mean, I love John Jones as a fighter. As opinionated as I am of, as far as critiquing his antics outside of fighting, you are nuts if you think he's not one of, if not the best fighter this sport has ever seen. You're nuts. Like, he is absolutely one of the up there. But John Jones is nuts if he thinks that he can keep crashing his car into people, keep speeding, keep getting all these warnings, and then nothing ever happened to him. Yes, he had to give up his title, but dude, that just gave him more time off, more time to reassess his life, gave him a well-deserved break, and he did some. He got a little easy baby punishment of doing community service. I mean, come on, man. You get off scot-free every time, and obviously that's not enough to get the message through to you. Now, I'm not going to pass judgment on what he needs, what his punishment should be if he is guilty indeed, but, I mean, look, everyday citizens like me and you, if we are violating a probation in most states, that's a 3-week minimum jail time. If that's the case, I hope that, geez, I don't think John Jones is a flight risk, I hope they just postpone that until after the fight. Do an easy 3 weeks and you're out, whatever. Or, heck, geez, just take away his driver's license. That simple. Force him to not drive anymore. And then as far as the UFC goes, I mean, they fined him, I believe, $10,000 when he sniffed cocaine. Now, that wasn't illegal because he did it in Brazil. And he wasn't punished by the NSAC. It didn't violate any performance-enhancing drug tests or anything. Like, technically, he was in the green as far as what is legal. But because it violated the code of conduct as described in his UFC contract, he was fined about $10,000. Now, what is the fine for this? Violating a probation, endangering lives, etc. I don't know. I think at most, maybe just a fine off of his purse, whatever. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not the person to pass judgment on this, but something's got to happen so that, I mean, because do we really have to wait till he kills somebody before something real happens to him? Or will nothing real happen to him then? I mean, I don't want that it to come to that. Take away his driver's license, I'll be happy.
So. I know, right? But hey, you know what? Like I said, and in the clip, the only good I can see coming from this, and like I said, I really want to see Jones fight Rumble eventually, but Rumble's camp, someone leaked from his gym that said, hey, you know what? Rumble's game. He's ready to fight. He's conditioned, and I think he's been prepping, and you know, that's smart on his part because he came off a huge win over Ryan Bader, who probably should have been fighting for the title before Jones jumped back into the game. So, you know, Rumble puts him down pretty easily. He's ready to, you know, who do you give this guy? For Rumble to be prepared for one of the two guys to drop out for a chance to fight for the title, it's smart. And especially nowadays, you know. And Rumble has already made it clear that he wants that title shot. So, I mean, because it gives me hope that if John Jones does happen to slip out, Rumble gets his revenge fight against DC, which would be awesome, considering as long as DC is still good to take that fight. But, you know, either way, it's a win-win. If DC can't fight, Rumble fights Jones. If Jones gets pulled off the card, then Rumble gets to revenge against DC. So that's the only light I can see if something bad happens here.
Yeah, you know, however, how do you think that will fare if that is a last-minute replacement for UFC 199? Because the co-main event is Demetrius Johnson, who I consider to be probably the best fighter in the world right now, or pound-for-pound best, but he has proven to not be a ticket mover. Do you think DC and Rumble as a main event last minute will still bring in the numbers? Because even last year, unfortunately, even though last year for 2015, I thought the best card of the year was, as far as like quality fights were concerned, was that DC versus Rumble one, along with, you know, that also had Weidman versus Vitor Belfort. That was a fun freaking card, great fights on the whole freaking card, and but unfortunately even that didn't exactly sell the best. So what's your take on that? Do you think I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think a lot of people are drawn to these last-minute replacement fights, and a lot of media could be made. Depending on how Rumble and DC would play it off, assuming that Jones isn't in, I mean, they could sell that fight. I mean, there's not a ton of bad blood. You know, Rumble is humble Rumble, which is awesome, but, you know, there's enough, I think, some animosity enough there that they could probably market the fight pretty well. And, again, the media might thrive off of a last-minute replacement. They might get a boost in, you know, oh, you know, all this controversy, and then, boom, we got somebody stepped in. Okay, you know, it's happened, and it's salvageable, depending on how long they wait before, you know, it depends on how quick, how close they are to the actual fight in getting a last-minute replacement. 2 weeks seems to be the norm now, so
yeah,
somewhere around there would be good timing.
All right. Well, cool. So we'll see how that pans out. I honestly hope to see this fight. So let's move on to the next big news that happened. And that is that MMA is finally legalized in New York City. Well, New York State. And as, you know, a result, also New York City. Now, the Madison Square Garden, you know, like some of the biggest fights in combat sports have taken place at the Madison Square Garden. So it's kind of cool. There's a iconic or like there's like an element of awe to think that you'll finally see an MMA fight at MSG. So I'm hyped for it. But it's also one of those things that leading up to it, I didn't really care if they ever got legalized or not. Reason being is because I live on the West Coast. I live in Las Vegas, Nevada. We are the fight capital of the world. Everybody else, even when fights are taking place in other states, other countries, the fight takes place at 6 p.m. Las Vegas time because it all revolves around us. We're pretty spoiled that way. Granted, not every fight's like that, but like 90% of the time. So I was like, look, I could care less if New York keeps missing out on one of the most exciting sports in the world. That's their loss, and it's unfortunately their loss because some of the best fighters right now are coming out in New York. Chris Weidman, John Jones, Frankie Edgar, come on, son. And so I'm glad that those guys will finally be able to fight in their own backyard, that they can finally represent in their hometown. So it's good news, but it's one of those things where previous to this, I could care less. It's like, you know what? I've got it here. I mean, I see most of it on TV anyways. So it's not, you know, like the venue itself won't always transfer over. But I mean, now that I've thought about it a little more, I'm a little excited. Now, it's kind of weird leading up to this because I'm just going to play this clip really quick because I could not believe the stuff coming out of people's mouths that supposedly were studied on this subject. Supposedly, these elected officials were weighing whether or not they should legalize this sport. You'd assume that they were educated on the subject, especially since this is like the eighth time that they've tried to get this put to a vote to get it legalized. So here, listen to some of this ridiculousness that they were spouting.
This thing goes too far.
Two nearly naked hot men rolling around on top of one another, trying to dominate each other.
Choke and kick. And
bare knuckles on the side of your head.
Rats bite, whatever they can do.
That's gay porn with a different ending.
We've been in cages fighting on the plantation.
Going to turn to violence.
Beat his or her brains out.
In a cage wearing a Speedo.
Throwing two human beings in a cage.
My gosh. I mean, okay, come on. Now, do we really need to talk about how wrong all of that was? Okay, first of all, Rosie O'Donnell's brother, I thought him of all people would be a little bit open to something resembling gay porn, but apparently not. Second of all, this is a very immature attitude to take towards this. These are skilled athletes with great sportsmanship, and they're competing at the highest level. It's ridiculous that you're calling this gay porn because that's like the little kid answer when they see the wrestling aspect. But okay, whatever, to each their own. But then on top of that, I mean, like, there's Barron was comparing this to slavery. Oh, come on, man. Well, okay, the biggest difference there is that in slavery, yes, it was barbaric. You were forcing slaves to fight for the death for other people's entertainment. This is giving an employment opportunity to free Americans. Well, actually, not just Americans, free people, saying, hey, you want to make some money? Well, here you go. Oh, and by the way, it's not to the death. We have a regulation. We have referees. We have cage-side doctors. All these people ready to make sure that you're taken care of. And not, by the way, you're getting paid a pretty decent amount to do it as well. You'll be able to feed your family off of this. So get that slavery nonsense out of here. It's not even close. That is crazy chick talking about, oh, they're, you know, bare knuckles on the side of your head, and who else was it talking about biting? I'm like, okay, please, please, you're an elected official. When you are voting, representing the people who elected you, I would assume that you educate yourself on the subjects that you're supposedly voting on their behalf, which these guys didn't, because MMA hasn't been bare knuckle since, like, the original UFC days, since, like, the early 90s. Come on, we are so far beyond that. And even back then, one of the few rules was no biting. There was no biting, no eye gouging. That was it. You could kick and punch to the nuts, but no biting. So that's been out off the table since I don't even know when I've seen that. So, come on. I mean, these people should be ashamed of themselves. They should be embarrassed of themselves. So I don't know what's gonna happen as a result, but it was ridiculous. But you know, I mean, but look, there were reasonable people who thank goodness represented and gave the subject the attention it deserved, and it got passed. So that being said, now if you'll allow me just a moment. We're having some technical difficulties. I just lost the schmo. He is no longer streaming right now. I don't see him, but who knows? We'll probably get him back. If not, you're going to listen to me just ramble on by myself, and I hope you don't go away because of that. But I totally understand. I'm kind of this monotone weirdo dude. But moving on. Now that MMA is legal in New York, the schmo and I put together our fantasy Madison Square Garden card. The first fight to happen in New York City. Oh, hey, the schmo is back. Hold up. One moment, folks. Okay, well, I'm going to keep going with the podcast here. Unfortunately, for everybody listening, the schmo's computer crashed on him. So I'm just going to kind of wrap this up really quick. Like I was saying, the schmo and I went ahead and gave our breakdown for our fantasy Madison Square Garden cards. Now, I don't know what his was, but this is mine. So, I am going to say that the main event is Jon Jones versus Daniel Cormier, which means that I am raining on the parade of him making it to UFC 197. I think Jones, whether it's for legal disputes or for injury's sake, he is not going to make this card, and he's going to be replaced by Rumble Johnson. I think Cormier does the same thing to Rumble in a rematch, and he will remain the champion, and then he will rematch Jon Jones finally in Madison Square Garden. And so that's the main event. Co-main event. Finally, we will see Frankie Edgar versus Conor McGregor at Madison Square Garden. So that'll be an awesome co-main event, and long time coming, and Conor will get his third loss in a row, just saying. Now, we've got the event before that, Chris Weidman, who I predict by this point has once again become the middleweight champion of the world. Chris Weidman will face, at long last, Michael Bisping. Now, while I don't ever really care to see Bisping fight Rockhold again, because I just think he's a bad matchup for Bisping any day, headbutts or not, I do want to see Bisping fight for the title before he calls it a career. So, Michael Bisping versus Chris Weidman in Chris Weidman's hometown. And the two fights that precede that on the main card, I'm going to have a number one contender spot, because we've got currently number five ranked Aljamain Sterling versus TJ Dillashaw. I don't think this is a stretch to think these guys should match up. I know we've got a lot of good bantamweights, but of course, Aljo being a New Yorker should like kind of get that push because he's the hometown boy. And he's going to be fighting for a high-stakes fight, putting it in title shot discussion. Now, I've kind of gone on this random, almost freak show kind of a fight for the first fight on the main card. Matt Serra went on record saying that he is done with MMA unless they ever get a fight in Madison Square Garden. So, a four-fun fight with two high-profile guys, two legends in the sport. Matt Serra will rematch BJ Penn. I don't think this is in the realm of being too out there. I mean, it probably could be. I mean, Matt Serra's been on the TRT and, you know, stacking on some serious muscle. He's probably a heavyweight right now, but I think, you know, with the right circumstances, he'll cycle off of that TRT, get natural again, lean out to a 155. I would have this at lightweight. I know BJ wanted to fight at featherweight, but I think having it at lightweight would be a doable and a realistic good fight. So that's my fantasy New York card. What are yours? Let us know. Let us know in the comments. Let us know when you email us. Email us at facetofootstylepodcast@gmail.com to let us know what your fantasy matchup is for the New York, for the very first New York card. And that's facetofootstylepodcast@gmail.com with no numbers, no punctuation. Just spell it all out. facetofootstylepodcast@gmail.com. Now, besides that, we've got one last big news item. UFC 200 just got dropped on us officially. We know that is officially going to be, let's see, it's going to officially be Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor 2, and stupidly, this is going to be at welterweight. I know, and once again, this is all Conor McGregor getting exactly what he wants. It's not a stretch to think, why is the UFC giving him what he wants? Of course, it's because he brings in the money, even in his losses. And so, Conor McGregor, not only is he not defending his title, but he's fighting once again at 170. Nate didn't want this at 170. Nate said on UFC Tonight that I would like it to be at 155 because I'm more in shape for that. I would like to be in shape for the fight. He feels like he's at his best fighting shape when he's at 155. Not only that, Nate also said that he would like it to be at 155 because he's sick of the excuses. Because while Conor and his team have not given any excuses for his loss, a lot of his legions of fans are doing this. A lot of them are saying, oh, Nate only won because it was at 170 and he's the bigger guy and yada yada. Give, you know, Conor gets a pass because he's fighting 25 pounds heavier than he should be. No, look, you saw basically two lightweights fighting but without cutting weight the week of. I mean, they were roughly, look, Conor, if he was fighting at his more natural weight at 155, he would be fighting guys like Nate Diaz anyways. And so, but this is to speak of the passion of Conor McGregor. This guy is driven. He wants to avenge his loss with the exact same circumstances as it was the first time. And you know what? Whatever your opinions of Conor is, that's a pretty cool thing that he's so driven to do something like that. His corner actually tried to talk him out of taking this fight at that weight, but he's committed. He wants to avenge this loss, and he wants it to be the same circumstances. I think that's a pretty cool thing. You know, even though I'm not the biggest Conor McGregor fan, I'm going to give him props for that. I think that's pretty cool. So that's happening. But the co-main event, this I did not see. Jose Aldo versus Frankie Edgar 2. This is the rematch. Now, if you recall, these guys fought, I believe it was in 2012. This was Frankie's first fight at featherweight. And he was fighting Jose Aldo, who he definitely landed the harder shots throughout the fight, but he gassed towards the end of the fight. You could make an argument that Frankie won the third round. And he definitely won the fourth and the fifth rounds. But the judges all saw it unanimously for Jose Aldo. And so, I mean, Frankie lost, but it was a pretty close fight. And Frankie has been on a tear ever since. Aldo has received his first loss in 10 years ever since. So it's not a stress to think. Now, these guys are facing off for the interim title. That's the part I think is a bunch of BS. Conor, this is his second fight not defending his title. And not only that, he's not defending his title while on the same card as is two number one contenders. That's a bunch of crap. I think if he's not defending his title for the second time in a row, he should be forced to vacate that title. That's not the case. So, I mean, whatever, we'll leave it at that. I think this is some BS that these guys are fighting for an interim title. They should be fighting for the real title. Both of these guys deserve that. But whatever, interim title. And after that, Conor has to fight the winner of this. Or give it up. That's it. Like, there's no more speculation on who the number one contender is, who should get it. No, you have to unify the titles after that. So that's the only reason why I agree with why they're doing this, is because it's basically signing it in blood that this is the next fight for the champion to take. Now, after that, we've got Travis Brown versus Cain Velasquez. Should be an awesome fight. This is, you know, Travis Brown wanted to get this fight before Verdum, but got derailed a few times. And Velasquez needs a good fight with a slightly lower ranked opponent right now anyways to get back into his groove. I think it's a good call. Besides that, we've got Derek Brunson versus Gegard Mousasi. We've got Kelvin Gastelum versus Johnny Hendricks, which is going to be huge. And Takanori Gomi versus Jim Miller. All those exciting. The standout one to me being Kelvin Gastelum versus Johnny Hendricks. Because this is that next fight that Kelvin needs to... I mean, this will put him close to, if not in the top five, getting a win over the former champion like this. But Johnny Hendricks, like, if he loses, I don't really know what you do with the guy. He's been on his way out. This will be his, what, third loss in a row? No. He beat Matt Brown after he lost his title. But then, yeah, lost to, didn't make weight after that, lost to a weight cut. And then he lost to Tyron Woodley. And so, Then lost to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, which was devastating. I did not see that coming when it happened. So if he loses to an up-and-comer who I don't think Kelvin's even in the... I think he's like number 13 right now. I mean, you can't even keep Johnny in the top 10, I don't think. I don't know. Rankings are all messed up anyway, so I won't put a lot of value in that. But I think at that point you're kind of solidifying that Johnny Hendricks's second run at a title shot are probably pretty derailed at that point, which is crazy because the fall for Johnny Hendricks was pretty quick. But I mean, whatever. But at the, you know, now all that being said, I'm not counting Johnny Hendricks out of this. We saw what Stephen Wonderboy Thompson was able to do to the guy. Kelvin Gastelum is not a Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. They are very different fighters. In fact, Kelvin looks like a Johnny Hendricks almost. He's got some heavy hands. He's got some good head movement with his striking, but he's got a very strong wrestling base. So this is really kind of Johnny Hendricks versus Johnny Hendricks versus Johnny Hendricks 2.0. So we'll see how this goes. I'm not counting Johnny out, but I'm just saying that the repercussions for losing this one are going to be pretty serious. But that being said, that's UFC 200. I personally did not want to see Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor 2 yet. And I definitely wanted to see it at lightweight, but you know what? Them's the breaks, and it's still gonna. It was a fun fight the first time. It'll be a fun fight the second time. I predict Nate getting the win, and I. But whether or not he does, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, this is what they're giving us, and if this is the worst thing that's being given to MMA fans is a rematch of an exciting matchup, then boo freaking who? I mean, let's roll with it. I mean, these are some pretty good times to be an MMA fan. We're getting pretty spoiled if we're complaining about awesome fights like this. Now, I'm just going to leave off with a World Series of Fighting breakdown, actually, because this is the only fight that we've got. We've had this will by the time we have Dos Santos versus Rothwell, we'll have had about three straight weeks off of UFC events. So the only fight card coming up this week is World Series of Fighting number 30. Now, the only one I'm even going to touch on this is John Fitch versus Zeferino. Now, Zeferino had a brief run in the UFC, lost both of his UFC fights, but he's actually got a pretty impressive record. He is now at 20-7. The thing that surprises me about this fight is they're both fighting for the vacant welterweight title, which I don't understand why it's not John Fitch versus Jake Shields. I know that Shields got in trouble a bit because he punched Palomino in the back of the head after the fight was ended, but at the same time, I don't know. I mean, he spent a whole fight getting his eyes gouged out and then Palomino holding on to a submission too long, so that's almost like a reasonable reaction. That was almost a self-defense reaction, but I don't know, whatever. I doubt that he got suspended this long, because even that fight's almost a year ago. But whatever, he's not fighting for it. And it's kind of weird to me that Zeferino is the one fighting for the welterweight title, because last I knew, he was fighting at lightweight. He was in that 8-man one-night tournament for the WSOF lightweight tournament. And that was an interesting card. And man, that was a fun night. As far as like fight cards go, that's one of the funnest I've seen. He beat Brian Foster by a heel hook. Then he went on and beat Jorge Patino with a heel hook as well. And then Brian Foster was put back in circulation because he was filling in for a fighter who was too injured to continue, even though he had won. So he rematched Brian Foster all within the same night and ended up getting knocked out by him. So that was a very fun event, but that was all a competition to become the next contender for Justin Gaethje's lightweight title. And now all of a sudden he's that was his last fight, and now he's immediately fighting for the welterweight title. That was just kind of weird to me, but you know what? I don't think that they have the deepest welterweight division in the World Series of Fighting. I really would have liked to see John Fitch versus Jake Shields, but you know, them's the breaks. Besides that, there's a lot of fun matchups on this card. I'm not going to go into detail breaking them all down, but definitely check it out. That's going to be on NBCSN. Coming up on April 2nd, excuse me. Or if you're in town, hey, check it out at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino here in Las Vegas. That's pretty much going to do it for now. Tune in next week. We're going to cover more news. I'll give you the recap of the WSOF 30. And we're also going to give our predictions and breakdowns for the upcoming Rothwell versus Junior Dos Santos. Once again, if you've got any questions or comments, want to point out how dumb we are, by all means, send us an email. We'll check and respond to all of them. You can once again reach us at facetofootstylepodcast@gmail.com. No punctuation, no numbers. And also, just a quick shout out. I hope you'll allow me this. A real legend in hip hop died this weekend. I'm only mentioning this because I'm a huge fan. Like, you know, these guys' music definitely have made a mark on my life, and I loved it. Five Dog, one fourth of the group, A Tribe Called Quest, passed away, lost his lifelong battle with diabetes. And so that's why the intro music this week is going to be just a little compilation of some of my favorite verses from the guy. So rest in peace, Five Dog, and shout out to A Tribe Called Quest. And we'll catch you guys all next week. Thanks for tuning in. And Shmo will get all this stuff figured out, so he'll be here to finish the podcast with me next week. And peace out, everybody. Bye. Tell your mother, tell your father, send a telegram. I'm like an energizer, cause you see I last long. My crew is never ever whack because we stand strong. Now if you say my style is whack, I swear you're dead wrong. I slay that body and El Segundo, then push it along. You'll be a fool to reply, the fight is not the man. Cause you know, and I know, that you know who I am. A special shout out piece goes out to all my pals, you see. And a middle finger goes for all you punk MCs. Cause I love it when you whack MCs despise me. They get vexed, I will next, cause none can test me. I'm just a rotten MC who's 5'3" and very brave. On top remaining, no, I'm training cause I misbehave. I come correct in full effect of all my holes in check. And before I get the butt, the gym must be a wreck. You see, my aura's positive, I don't promote no junk. See, I'm far from a bully and I ain't a punk. Extremity of rhythm, yeah, that's what you heard. So just clean out your ears and just check the word. Back in 89, I simply slid into place. Buddy, 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 all up in your face. A lot of kids was busting rhymes, but they had no taste. Some said Quest was whack, but now is that the case? To have a mic in my hand, without that, it's like kryptonite and Superman. So Shahid come in with the sugar cuts. Fife throws my name, but on stage call me Dynamite. When was the last time you heard the fight for sloppy? Lyrics anonymous, you never hear me copy. Top notch, baby, never coming less. Sky's the limit, you got to believe up in Quest. Sit back, relax, get up off the path. If not that, here's a dance floor, come move that ass. Non-believers, you can check the stats. I run with Shahid and the brother Abstract. Niggas know the time when Quest is in the jam. I never let a statue tell me how nice I am. Coming with more hits than the Braves and the Yankees. Living mad fat like a oversized Bambi. The wackest crews try to diss, it makes me laugh. When my track record's longer than a DC-20 aircraft. So next time that you think you want something here, make something different, take that garbage to St. Elsewhere. I don't know what to say, but here I go freaking.
the papes come, then you know I'll seek it. I'm just a short brother, dark skin face, weigh a buck 50, 36 waist. Hair is crazy curly, foot like Mr. Furley. To this day, I still believe that no MC can serve me. Others try to front, but everybody know. I get more props than the Arsenio Hall, so party animal I was, but now I chill at home. All I do is write rhymes, eat, drink, shit, and bone. Find my thrill in Amityville. I'm always in the island, fudging luck, you know the time. They know who keeps me smiling. Go out on my own, something that I gotta do. Do what the hell I want and have no one to listen to. I'm prompt with my business and I do things on the double. Yo, I'm out like Buster Douglas. I say peace to MC Trouble. Rest in peace.
Damn, Fife, you got fat.
Yeah, I know it looks pathetic. Ali Shaheed Muhammad got me doing calisthenics. Needless to say, boy, I'm bad to the bone. Making love to my mic like Jerobe on the phone. But no time for talks. There's bills to be paid.
What?
Hoes to be laid.
What?
Punks to be sprayed.
What?
Chumps to attack. So my man, watch your back. 93 means skills are a must, so never lack. Sit back and learn. Come now, watch the birdie. His styles are incomplete, same as Vinny Testa birdie. Battling? Whenever. Hot damn. Microphone, why one time, bam. Hey yo, swing, 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 chop, chop, chop. Yo, that's the sound when MCs get mopped. Don't come around town without the hip in your hop. Cause when the shit hits the fan, that ass will get dropped. MCs wanna attack me, but them punks can't go. I have you left without a job, like I get from the love boat. Some money, watch your mouth, I might have to bust you. Battling MCs. From JFK to Russia, back down to London, Sweden and Brazil. Do a US tour for 3 months and then I chill. Styles be fat like Jackie Gleason, the rest be art corny. People love the dog like the kids love Barney. I love you, you love me. The shorty fight dog is your favorite MC. So move back yourself, dread, you know the element. The tribe is good for your health like a can of nutriment. MCs don't have no wins, MCs don't have no bitch. I flip shit crazy than a busload full of Jerry's kids. Your crew don't want it, and your crew don't want it. But if you feel you can swing it, the money, please bring it. Large professor in the house, you know how we do. I skate on your crew, like Mario Lemieux. Beast the Icon and the rest of the crew. I meet you guys in front of the cleaners, bring the blunts in the room. So
competition, them try to come sideways. But competition, them must come straightway. Competition, them try to come sideways. But competition, them must come straightway. How's about that? It seems like it's my turn again. All through the years, my mic has been my best friend. I know some brothers wonder, can Piper really kick it? Some even wanna diss me, but why sweat it? I'm all into my music, cause that's how I make tapes. Try to make hits like it Capri makes tapes. Me sweat another, I do my own thing. Strictly hardcore tracks, not a new jack swing. I grew up as a Christian, so to die I give thanks. Collect my banks, listen to Shabba Ranks. I sing and chat, I do all of that. It's 1991 and I refuse to come back. I take off my hat to other crews that tend to rock. But the low end theory's here, it's time to wreck shop. I got tip and shot, so whom shall I fear? Stop, look and listen, but please don't stare. Send it to the store and buy the LP on Drive RCA, cassettes and CDs. Produced and arranged by the four-man crew. And oh shit, Skef Anselm, he gets props too. Make sure you have a system with some fat house speakers so the new shit can rock from Boston Massapequa. Cause where I come from, quality is job one. And everybody up on it, you know we get the job done. So peace to that crew, and peace to this crew. Bring on the tour, we'll see you at a theater nearest you.
Hey, yo, when it came to the block parties and the hip-hop parties, once I saw them grabbing mice and getting busy, I risked my livelihood, getting kicked out of the house and everything. Just to be a part of it.